Like, the fray is still in a basement, so, you know, probably not going to be showing up anytime soon.
You just want to roll it?
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams.
Hello, loyal fan, and welcome to Game of Nodes. This is our 111th episode, Critical Fail, which, you know, these titles just came up with without any consultation with anyone and generally make no sense whatsoever, except it seems like this week they may make sense with what we're probably going to drone on about for the next at least 30 minutes, I'm assuming. One of our guys, The Fray, decided that he wanted to, jam in a basement instead of come and chill on the show. So, hope you're enjoying your
I think music. It was watching a jam, not playing, right?
Oh, wait, no, he's actually at a venue though, right?
Yeah.
He's not just in his basement watching it on TV.
That would be something.
On that would fucking
be a,
YouTube.
That would be a new low for skipping a god.
sorry, boys, I can't come. I need to watch some TV.
It's like two flights of stairs I got to go up.
Ram is already in the comments hosing us for
what? Sounds like the last episode. I think that every Ram says it sounds like the last episode. I think that every week. We circle the drain.
Why would it sound like the last episode ever? Is it because of the intro?
He's a downer.
I hope it's a Lord of the Rings reference because Bilbo, on his 111th birthday, it's his last birthday. And so this is our 111th episode. Could be the last episode.
That is some fucking deep reference. Holy shit. Dude, that's amazing.
So I haven't looked at the news. Do we have any news this week?
We do. Yeah, there's a couple things in there.
Do we need to fire Rama yet? Is Rama contributing to the news?
I don't know. There's like one link and like two notes. So maybe he broke a collarbone or a clavicle or some shit.
Busted eardrum. Episode 111. That's the one we're on. Yeah, there's a. All right. Maybe it's time.
We don't have to start with that, though. I don't want to start with that.
No, let's talk about.
All right.
So Zion is having a. Hey?
We're already up to 17 viewers. See, look at that. Just fucking. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I reckon they're probably. If I hover over this. Yeah, a lot of those are bullshit views from X, Twitter. Perfect. Yeah. So, okay, well, at least actually all of us are having some, well, I'm not having problems, but both of you two are having problems with various node-related things this week. Actually,
I'm not having there's problems.
Later on, I want to talk a little bit about the magical fix of Injective and... And you guys were talking previously and probably wanted to continue your musings about your nodes. I think Schultzy is participating in a pretty high volume Zion testnet application, which is minting NFTs over IBC, which is a bit of a newish type of application. And having some issues with RPC nodes. And Usurper has a pretty high volume Say deployment, which has also been having some issues lately. I think you guys wanted to talk a little bit about that. And I wanted to talk, like I said before, about the Injective stuff, which is quite interesting. And anyway, you guys can take it away.
Tell me what's going on with Burnt.
I don't know. I'm kind of excited about the Injective improvements the most. Like,
did you want to talk about that first, Schultzy, and then we'll sort of roll into your Zion problems?
Yeah, let's do that because I'm pretty stoked about the Injective signing problems. So right now, for my signer, I have three nodes that I've been rotating between, and every single day, a new node resyncs, and that's how I was able to keep up to like 87% uptime with three full machines, full nodes resyncing daily. That's what I had to do. The fact that there was one little config change that had to happen and suddenly I'm at like 99% uptime, I'm outraged. Outraged, I say.
So a little bit of background on the Injective protocol. So as a validator on Injective, it is quite frustrating trying to maintain a high uptime. There's a lot of there's like a lot of IO on that application, and a lot of nodes struggle to keep up. I'm assuming with the head and P2P to be able to sign all of the blocks. And the remedies to date have been that you need to keep a relatively fresh database. That is, you know, deleting your database and resyncing from something that's either COSM pruned quite freshly, or even a state sync. But I'm not sure if there is actually state sync issues on Injective. So I'm pretty sure most of the snapshots that are coming through that are small are made small by COSM pruned.
Well, so that's mostly true, but not entirely true. There is one individual who has state sync working, and that's High Stake. Their snapshots are glorious. They're like 7 gigabytes or something. And the way they fixed state sync, quote unquote fixed, is they turned off errors for state syncing. And so they modified the binary itself. Yeah. So it still just pushes through. And that's what I was thinking off of every day. Every single day I download their latest snapshot and then run off of that. Shout out to High Stake. They are glorious.
So my validator nodes there have had pretty good uptime since we started, comparatively speaking to like a lot of other operators. And I don't know why that is. I think a lot of it comes down to just luck in P2P and peering. But we seem to have been able to maintain probably between like 500 and 3,000 misses per the window. A lot of other operators are sort of up, you know, around the 20 to 30,000 range, or probably at the 15 to 30,000 misses range in the window, which is what, 100,000 blocks, Schulte, I think.
Yeah, could be 100,000 blocks.
100,000. Yeah. So, anyway, historically difficult to get a good signing rate. So keeping a fresh database, there are like, you know, certain settings that are recommended, like you know, peer limits and, geez, I can't remember what the other ones are offhand. But they typically need, you know, just blazing fast core speeds, like as fast as you can get, bigger drives, fastest drives you can get your hands on. I don't think the RAM has particularly mattered too much in the past, and sort of RAID zeroing things together and just getting as much I/O and thread speed as possible on these machines to just sort of try and keep up. And Horcrux has helped with my nodes by having multiple distributed around the place and using Horcrux. So I think we run three dedicated servers for Injective as well with Horcrux. And the team at Injective Labs last week, we started testing some settings. Do you have those settings offhand, Schulte? I can pull them up.
Not offhand, but no.
I don't remember what sections they actually were from, but I will.
Peer-to-peer, I think. I think
in the peer-to-peer section. It was in the peer-to-peer, was it?
I'm very certain, yeah.
Was it Oracle changes or binary, like config or apt-toml type shit?
It's in the config toml.
And what did they do? They just changed some signing window thing or something else? What was it?
I'll tell you what they are here in a second, if I can.
Peer-to-peer latency, I think. So, like, I think if I remember correctly, there is a config for basically disconnecting a little early.
Yeah.
So the flush throttle timeout and the peer gossip sleep duration, basically both of those were reduced, right? And so the peer gossip sleep duration probably works as explained, is like between every kind of talk, it waits, we're having it wait less. And same with the throttle timeout.
And so flush throttle timeout, peer gossip sleep duration. Yeah. Yeah, and well, man, it works miracles. It's you know, we're down to like what, less than 100 misses.
So is this anything to do with Pego and all that shit, or this is purely signing?
No, this is just purely signing.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
it's vanity, right? Because
it's fucking vanity, isn't it? That's the reason we have distributed systems. Like the fact that you guys are at 90% or 95% doesn't make a fucking bit of difference in the overall chain or anything else.
but a lot of people were getting down to the 70s and 60s. So like we were one of them, and that was with learning three nodes. Yeah. So like even doing a lot of our best practices, we were going really low. And
even with multiple nodes behind Horcrux, just so with that setting, it would still
and degen Horcrux everything within 10 milliseconds round trip. Yeah. Wow. It was brutal.
And with Injective, like a lot of your delegations are based on certain performance metrics, and that's one of them. And not only that, though, like some operators were getting down to like the wire to getting slashed because the slash window is 50%. So, you know, if you're already missing a lot and then you have an issue with your node that makes you miss for a little bit longer, 100%, and then you're kind of stuffed. So,
yeah. So, what you just proved is that even though everybody makes delegation decisions off of these bullshit metrics, that that bullshit metric was completely changed by one small config change.
Just one small config change.
So, yeah. did it have anything to do with the, did it have anything to do with Schulte's ability to deliver this? No. Did his signing ability? So this whole fucking bullshit, like that you totally just explained the whole situation, right? Like all these delegators making a decision off this fucking metric, and this fucking metric is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean that's fair,
right? So you just said it was like I mean, we made this one config change on the binary that the team made, and now suddenly we're all at 95%, and like, oh look at, we're all able to sign. But does the past reflect on Schulte's ability to deliver nodes and RPC or to deliver validators in a secure manner at scale? And does that make him a worse validator? It's just fucking dumb, right?
So I would say that like this was a, you know, a collective issue that needed to be solved because, you know, the more blocks you miss, you know, the more proposals you miss. And if you miss proposals, it affects the chain. And its ability to put through.
I'm not saying it didn't need to be solved. I'm just saying there's so many fucking variables that just boiling it down to like some sort of signing thing is fucking dumb. Like it's the whole purpose of the situation and the whole purpose of being able to do this is to be able to have a distributed structure that allows for failure. And in this situation, you had validators being measured against a metric that was totally out of their control. That changed one config file change, and then suddenly like everybody's metrics changes, right?
So what I said about the delegations was, I would say it was a half truth. It is a metric, but it was not enforced because of the blanket problem.
Slashing window would have been forced, right?
Yeah, slashing would have. But yeah, I mean, this is also a pretty specific Injective problem. Like not a lot of other chains have this absolutely prolific signing problem. And I've noticed that a lot of chains have gotten better since IAVL V1 as well. So the DYDX was having a bit of a signing problem. It probably wasn't as bad, but their window is only 8,000 blocks as well. So there were people who were sort of missing 1,000, 1,500 blocks in there. And I noticed as soon as they upgraded IAVL V1, it cleared up a lot of those as well. And man, the difference, it was kind of similar to when, you know, SayDB was implemented, which I think is an implementation of IAVL V1. And like the abuse on your drives is night and day. I think so, yeah. I think they took the upstream and sort of fast-tracked it and made some other changes.
Huh.
I think. I'm not 100% sure. Okay. But the difference is night and day on all of the chains that I've seen that have changed to IAVL V1. The abuse on the drives just goes down astronomically. Like I've got some bad drives around on some nodes. Like, you know, they must be consumer drives and something. And the wear levels on those were just astronomical, like 30% a month. And as soon as they switched over to IAVL, like basically the wear level flatlined. So the amount of like reads and writes going onto those drives dramatically changed between the two software versions. I'm not sure if you saw the same thing, Schulte, with your nodes. I got rid of those nodes with those shitty drives, by the way, because they also had shitty networks and shitty uptime and cost the most out of all of my fucking nodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. So the team made it. So did
Did somebody spearhead that, or that was that the Injective team that made that discovery, so, or was that somebody else?
Injective Labs came up with the configuration change, but I think they have been messing with things for quite some time to try and find like the smoking gun.
Cool.
And it appears as if they have found it.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I was like, when they asked me to test, I thought, oh, you know, it might be like a 20% improvement or something. You know, it's just like someone turned the lights on.
Yeah, that was kind of like, that was like CDB, right? Like that was totally different.
Yeah, it's just completely
like rethink like what hardware we choose, like pruning, we had no pruning, and like just the state sync structure and like all this shit to get those nodes to do what we want to, and then all kind of just disappeared, right? Now we're doing different issues, but whatever.
Yeah, different issues, but similar outcome. It's just some small change, or in Say's instance, is probably quite a big change and a lot of engineering.
Yeah.
But, you know, a change and then just makes things so much better. But I guess that's, you know, that's the iterative nature of these things, right?
Yeah.
You have a problem, you work on it, you fix it, you tackle the next one.
Yeah, I think the challenge with and part of the part that gives me stress with that is that realization where, hey, this is all in motion and all that kind of stuff is totally true, right? Like it's not perfect. We find all these different issues. There's so many moving parts and like so many things that are changing, and you find new avenues. Like I'm sure we're going to talk about with this burnt thing, right? You're finding new avenues, but at the same time, there's an expectation like this is totally going to work. And like, why can't we support this? And why is this issue happening? And we're in mainnet or something else similar to that. And I think that idea that there's an incredible amount of untested software, that new issues are discovered every day, as a node op, kind of comes down to the node op, not necessarily the team, and say, maybe not 100% sometimes, or from a provider perspective. And it's tough to be able to guarantee a specific SLA associated to a service when the underlying software to support that service may not give you at all the tools you need to be able to deliver that. You know what I mean? Which could be RPC. It could be a validator service. Like we're talking about the Injective, it could be anything. But it's tough to be able to be in that position where you're trying to troubleshoot the best you can, but underlying or something just incredibly broken. Right. Or just needs to be pushed forward.
Yeah. But I think like, in terms of RPC specifically, like I think the teams that you're providing it to have probably the best idea of the underlying issues in the chain that they're working on. And like I've never had problems with, you know, we have certain SLA conditions and no one has ever tried to, you know, enforce one of those conditions based on a problem with the chain software. It's more like a clause of negligence if you just allow your nodes to continue to have issues when there's no real underlying problem. But we have to, in our contracts, write out issues of the base software because we have absolutely no control over that whatsoever.
Yeah, that's changed.
Well, but I think that falls back to what Usurper was saying before, in that, yes, that's true for other entities, but slashing is an example of a contract that can't always be totally upheld, right? Like Pega.
Yeah.
That's in effect a blockchain enforced contract that is very difficult to truly adhere to.
Yeah. So I will say one thing about Pega. It was more so a huge burden. Like it was a pain to deal with Pega, right? In that, you know, there were software problems and there were any number of things that made it difficult to deal with. And the slashing was astronomical, especially if you had a lot of delegations. There is, you know, validators were getting slashed while their delegators were getting slashed, you know, $100,000 in one instance. And you only have 2 hours to recognize and fix a problem. Had 2 hours to recognize and fix the problem, right? And but in saying that, like it was possible if you had, you know, on-call people and you had fucking like just systems of annoyance to keep you up to date with it. So, you know,
but
it was that's possible, but it was also very easy to get slashed if
yeah,
the that, conditions were right. Yeah.
But we've said that software is a piece of shit, right?
Like, well, yeah, it seems to have been improved a lot recently.
Okay. I mean, you're in that cartel, so I can understand. I'm not in that cartel, so I can say whatever the hell I want. But from what I've heard, it's been a real fucking bitch, and it's not the greatest piece of software. And then number two, you're held to a standard associated to that software, and there's a huge amount of learning curve to understand the intricacies of how to run that successfully, right? And you guys learn that through testnet, right? And other types of situations, like you learn how this thing fucking works, right?
Well, no. That's kind of the fun part of Pego as well, is that the testnet is closed. So if you're going to join in on mainnet, most people who join mainnet immediately get slashed on Pego.
Right. Right. That's my point. Like, can't test my beforehand. Point is the learning curve is so high on this thing, and it's not like the most it's not a great piece. Can we agree that it's not a great piece of software? Like, it's not the best thing that's ever been written, right? It's somewhere in between.
There are conditions where it just fails to operate. So that would probably
that constitute is the most cartel right answer I've ever heard in my life.
it's definitely better than it was,
but it's better. Okay, it's better. It's better. Yeah. It's you guys. I understand. It's better. It is
better
building,
now.
Right, we're building.
Yeah,
but again, you're being held to a standard on something that is difficult to understand and has challenges to it that require a high amount of learning curve. And like, to some point, like if you come in a validator today on a Kujira and somebody puts on $1 million to get in that set and does whatever else, and they get slashed in the first two because of this stupid fucking thing, it's not like, is that why we're here for literally for this software that is run by 100 other fucking entities that if one is down, it doesn't make any difference? Like, what the fuck are we doing with that? Like, I don't understand. Like, is that really the need?
My only slashing is from the fucking Kujira.
From Pego, isn't it?
Oracle. No, it's from Kujira Oracle. I'm very fucking traumatized by that experience.
I know, so. Right? But I'm just saying, I just don't understand these standards that are built around executing on substandard software for a reason that has no fiscal or health need. Like, the chain will still run.
But you have to have something, right? You can't just say, well, we don't give a fuck about metrics at all. Like, it keeps the operators honest in some respect, in that they
that
at least
them honest? Off it. I'm not saying it's not black and white. Like, there's levels of gray, right? But like, to say that, like, hey, you know, you have this 2-hour slashing window, or you lose $200,000 because the software is a piece of shit. There's something between that and like not having any controls, right? Like I don't understand where these teams lose their sense of like understand. Even like we've seen like slashing windows at 100 blocks and stuff like that. Like, what the fuck? Like,
well, that's just because that was the default in the fucking SDK.
I know that's different. But like in that same situation, like this is not like you're treating this ecosystem like it's 100% figured out, and like, oh yeah, we stole the global internet of servers that communicate each other and do hashes associated to blocks, and like these incredible and IBC and like all these WASM contracts and calculations and all, like this incredibly complicated thing. And if you look back, if you peel back the covers associated to these SLAs, right, around these types of things, you pull back the covers and you actually look at what's running underneath that, and you go, holy shit, like there's a lot here that has a long way to go to be clearly this like enterprise ready. I hate using that word, but some sort of like, we can put this SLA associated to it. And so like things like that, like slashing windows associated Pego, just, I just don't understand that stuff. It seems like it's way too tight.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence, man. Like some windows, some standards that you've been held to are quite, you know, strict, but that's the sandbox we choose to play in, right? Like if you
no, it's not.
It is. There's no one fucking holding a gun to your head and saying go validate on Injective. Like that's the sandbox you choose to play in. If if you want to play in that sandbox and, for example, offer a, you know,
for what,
a
slash for the challenge protection. Of it?
No, well, you know, it's for the
for the what?
It's a business, right? It's for the revenue.
For, no. But like, but what is that SLA enforcing? Like that, what you just said, like you're like, if you want to hop in the sandbox for the challenge, but the challenge of what?
I'm not saying for the challenge. I'm saying that's, it's a known quantity. Like if you want to play in that sandbox, you know, the risks and you know, the challenge. So go play in it or don't. Like there's no one holding a gun to your head. So, or you could, you know, you could go and drum up some support and validate the hub where you'll never miss a block ever because there's 6 seconds and don't do anything. So
it's not that. It's just like, it just seems like the, some of the stuff is engineered around expectations that are unrealistic, right? For the level of quality and the level of complexity that's associated to it. And it's literally built to be resilient. Like that's the whole point.
But so, it's all beta software, right? But there are issues associated with like poor performing operators.
And again, it's not black and white. Like I understand that. Like, but 100 blocks, like 2 hours to get slashed. And
yeah, well, that's obviously fucking ridiculous. That's just a lapse.
People losing, like if somebody's like coming in from outside,
you could get slashed while you were taking a shit.
Yeah, seriously, I've taken 2 hour shits. Like, but the idea, like if I'm
that's entering, that's a fucking different problem, man.
But if I'm entering this ecosystem and I'm learning all this shit and I lose money because Null had a very minor incident associated to Pego and took a 2 hour shit and they get slashed because of it. That's fucking stupid. Like it doesn't, like, what are we, like, what is that? Like what? I just don't understand. Again, like, not black and white.
If like, I was on call and the alarm went off while I was taking a shit, I would snap one off and I'd go and fix it.
Just pinch it.
I'd pinch it and fix it.
Oh,
and,
man.
And I've had to do that before. Sometimes I've taken the laptop to the shitter with me. So,
oh yeah, I've done that.
You know, when you're on call, not, you're on call.
Not like
it's not preparation on call while you're not taking a shit.
Yeah, not in preparation of something happening. Just like while something's happening. Yeah, for sure. I've had that. I mean, yeah. You got to do what you got to do.
I've even thought about, you know, getting my woodworking skills out,
get a little stand. just pulling that pretty, thing up.
Like pretty handy height. with some you know, plywood and some pocket screws.
Perfect height. You can put little steps on the bottom, get your feet up so your legs don't fall asleep and shit. Like you do something nice.
Well, you know, it's like scientifically proven that you shit better when you've got your knees elevated.
I know. That's the. Do they have the here in the States? They there's something called the squatty potty. Do they have that? Have you heard of that thing?
I have not heard of that thing. No.
It. I don't even know. It was probably like, I don't know, it's got to be 15 years ago or something. But
I am going to look it up though.
It's called the squatty potty. It's just a piece of plastic that sits around the toilet. There's nothing crazy about it, but it does the same thing where it like lifts your legs up and gets your knees basically at or above. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think like it was, I don't know where I heard about it. Maybe it was Howard Stern, maybe back in the day or something like that. It was a radio jock here in the US. He's been around for 30 years or something or more. And he talked about it a little bit.
I'm going to have to stop you there because there is a website called Squatty Potty Australia. And they are, well, I guess this is a testament to the product in that. Their website says we'll be back soon. Sorry for the inconvenience. I guess they are not on call because they are probably enjoying taking their shit for 4 hours.
They might be. Yeah.
Sorry. Continue your Howard's.
No, that was story. It. That was it. So anyway, you could build that right into that. Maybe that's a product idea. Squatty potty, like combined with like a laptop stand, have a little like spot for, I don't know.
For the DevOps elite. With a little UPS in there.
A little coffee cup holder. What else you need in there?
Yeah, I could sell them to the like Google
Yeah, you get like a little separate like 9-inch screen with like some Grafana or like Zabbix dashboards in there that automatically scroll through. Just the problems dashboard is up. just like
two 20-inch monitors, a little slot for your like a docking slot for MacBook Pros only, because and it's always updated to be only compatible with the latest model. A little UPS battery,
UPS, 5G backup. You got a little 5G.
One of those little white, little, you know, extenders for the 5G.
A little Starlink backup, And you could sell like a little. You could sell like a little camp aspect of that too. So if you need to take it on the road, you can just kind of bring that thing out there and dig a hole or something. If you need to dig a hole, set it up.
Exactly.
Sunshade for you.
So what's been going on with your say shit, man? It's
so we've been dealing with this is on Arctic One, which is the say EVM V2 chain, which has been going really well, actually.
It's like Canary, right?
So that EVM stuff just moved to Atlantic 2. That last upgrade, that 501, that was all the EVM stuff coming into Atlantic 2. Which is why it jumped from like V3 to V5, I guess, is why that happened. And so on Arctic One, we have three nodes that are sitting behind a couple balancers, and we've been having this issue where basically, which we saw before, which was that nodes, not necessarily at the same time, but they would eventually keep growing in RAM. Like they would be fine, like 2 or 3 gigs, and they would eventually get to like, at some point, I put a cap on it, but at some point they would run the RAM to the point where the box would stop responding. Like it would completely, it wouldn't OOM. It wouldn't OOM. It would lock the box where I couldn't do anything. Like it would like 100% saturated. Like it wouldn't
reboot. Yeah.
Yeah. Like wouldn't do anything. And so I ended up putting some system D controls in there, which I need to do. Actually, I need to do that overall, which is just put a memory cap on every single one. And I think I'm going to do that in Ansible, where I'll take basically maybe a look at the total amount of RAM in the box and just cut it to say if it takes half of this and kill it, right? It's something like that. Because usually my box, like all the shit I run is probably 128 gigs. So if it hits 64 gigs, something's fucking wrong on a Cosmos chain for sure. And
you can't, can you use a percentage in that?
Yeah, sure.
Instead of actually having to use like a hard number?
Yeah. So in Ansible, I would take the number, because it's an Ansible thing that comes in through GitFax, and then I would just divide it by two and just say if it hits that, kill it. So I'm going to do that. Well, and
I don't GitFax though. With my Ansible, I have GitFax turned off.
I do on whatever I need, because right now also what's really fucking, this is totally unrelated, but I usually run Deb 12. I run Debian everywhere, and then I've been using so many different providers and different things, and like Debian, like not everybody supports, and some people just use Ubuntu, and I'm not really a huge Ubuntu fan, but whatever.
I've noticed that you run Deb 12 like over Ubuntu. Yeah. What's your gripe with Ubuntu, man?
I'm over 50 and purist.
That's after I was born. I don't like it.
I'm a purist. I'm a fucking purist. It's all Debian based, and I've grew up with Debian, and that has been my thing. I ran early days in Linux, I ran like I went through the whole Gentoo fucking thing, and then I ran all the stuff within Red Hat. I read about a ton of Red Hat, so I know the yum structure really well. I had an Arch period, which I ran Arch for a long time, but I've always had Debian boxes. I've always had Debian boxes. So
I don't like Deb 12. I use 2204 Ubuntu. It's the same thing, but for some reason, is Deb 12 ship with 6.1? Does it?
It does. It ships with 6, but though all my Ubuntu stuff I push to 6 anyway. I use Ubuntu package. What's that package for Ubuntu? I'll tell you what it is.
Oh, there's like a package that puts all the
Linux kernel 6 is so much better, dude. It's like it's just.
I still use kernel 6. I just build it every time. I install Ubuntu 2204, and then I just upgrade the kernel.
What do you do? Like manually?
What do I do? Well, no, there's a package you can install.
Oh, okay.
And then you just reboot. Thing. Yeah, sometimes
we're talking about the same thing then.
Sometimes I build it.
For this one is what the fuck is this called? Linux generic HWE dash and then Ansible distribution version. So that'd be Linux generic HWE-2204, I think is what it is. I think that's what that package is called. But that basically brings in the HWE version of that kernel for a bunch. Why the fuck are we talking about this? Anyway, Why are we talking about Ubuntu? How are we getting this situation?
You said you're Deb 12 boy.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with fucking Say? Where do we? How do we get down this path?
God, I don't know. Back to Say. Anyway, you have a problem. Anyway, with Say.
What the fuck is this have to? Anyway,
what happened, like, man? Where am I?
This is the story of my life. Like, we started like here, and then we ended up like down the road. Anyway, yeah. Back to Say. So we have a few nodes that are running on Say for Arctic One, which is the EVM type of structure. And what's been happening is that not at the same time, but over a period of time, we're starting to see that the RAM usage basically shoots up to like 2 or 3 gigs, and it'll shoot up to like 10, 12, and then it'll continually grow. Oh, we're talking about RAM controls. And then it'll continually grow. And then I put in the RAM controls, and basically at 40 or 50 gigs, it starts to slow it, and then it'll eventually OOM. But before that point, once it gets to 40, 50 gigs, what ends up happening is that the node stops responding. It stops to, it can't keep up with the block. The RPC shit shuts off, all this kind of shit, right? And so we're trying to figure out what the fuck is causing this, because it's clearly something related to, we get a lot of volume on our Arctic One. Like, we have a significant number of RPC requests. The Say team, their nodes, they haven't seen this, but they don't get the volume that we do. We probably get, I don't even know how much volume they get, but we get a decent amount of volume on Arctic One. I gave them access to a box, and then they've been running a couple different modified binaries. They've been doing a lot of like core dumps and like other types of pprof type stuff, and like trying to identify what's going on. And then they identified an issue, which might still be an issue, but it was a separate issue that on the WebSocket on EVM side, basically it wasn't like giving up. I forget exactly how they call it, but it wasn't, it was creating a socket for every connection. It wasn't reusing sockets and some sort of thing where it might've been chewing up RAM and it was like doing whatever. So we did a patch on that, and then that was, so we spent, excuse me, we spent a bunch of time, a couple of days ago, doing a patch on that. And then just kind of going through like what the issues are, and it only happens every like 3 or 4 hours. So it's really difficult to, you know, troubleshoot when everything takes 3 hours between kind of runs. And so we get through all that, everything else. And then yesterday or this morning, actually, we started getting all of these. When that was happening, we'd restate stink a node, and then we were getting app hashes. And so it would like app hash like after a point. And then one time, like all my nodes app hash, or they would all app hash at the same time or similar to the same time. So we're like, what the hell is this now? And so then we got on a call. So we were in a call for like 3 or 4 hours today, trying to figure out, just focus on the app hash, because without the app hash, we couldn't solve the other issue. And we started to realize that the network's still pretty small, and so we're pulling snapshots from like the same couple nodes, and one of those nodes is theirs. And for some reason, we determined when I get a snapshot from them, it doesn't have all the WASM files. So there might be 70 WASM files, and I get 60, and the other 10 don't have the .WASM on the name. They're just the like the hash without a .WASM, but the snapshot only gives me the .WASM. So I was missing those. And then obviously it hap-hashed. So we're trying to figure out a way to, so we couldn't figure out why that thing was named that way. And we're trying to figure that out. Took us a long time to figure that out. Number one, like make sure we like understanding all that. And I couldn't get another stainsig node. It was fucking weird, dude. So you were
getting snapshots, or you're getting state sync?
I'm sorry. Did I say snapshots? State sync. We were doing state syncs, and then in state sync, it wouldn't give me all the WASM because the state sync process would ignore files that weren't .wasm files. It would just, because the other ones were in there, but those nodes weren't app hashing. So it would actually run against that wasm file, even though it didn't have the .wasm name on it. It just had a hash name on it. And then, but those would never get delivered in the state sync. So I would have less of those. So every time I was trying to troubleshoot this RAM issue, I would state sync, and then the contract would call node app hash. And so it was like, all this shit at one time, trying to figure out like, so it took us a while to even figure out those are two separate issues. Number one, because you look at it and you say, oh, this, like the fact that the RAM goes up or it app hashes, it could be the same thing. It might be just a different instantiation of that thing. Right. And so, so that the app hash issue, we traced back down to a specific Say node that I was calling from an RPC perspective, but it actually, that's not true. I was calling a different Say node for RPC data, but it was pulling the snapshots from one Say server that had snapshots. And then for some reason, it was always pulling from that same server. And I couldn't get rid of the address book, like all this fucking shit, dude. And so, and then we figured out that this was the issue. So they're going back to Confio on the question around that, because I'm not sure if that's related to the upgrade that they just went through or something else. But it's really weird that that WASM was in there. So anyway, so we figured that out. I think that might be solved because at least we know what the source is. And then they did a patch. Yeah,
that kind of sounds like they changed convention at some point. And then
it does, right?
And then change the state sync at some point to only draw in things that conform to the new convention. And then there's just like chaff sitting in there from previous stuff.
Which is, but also I looked at that node. That node, they state synced early this morning. And their state sync script, I'll send you this to copy the script. Like they wrote, dude, they wrote a huge Paven nuke state script. So what they do is, which I thought was actually pretty cool, they save the private key out, they save the node key out. They completely delete the whole SAID directory, 100%. They dump it all. They re-init with the moniker name. They save the moniker name. They re-init with the moniker name. They move the keys back in, and then they run the state sync against a different node.
Why?
It's total nuke and pave. I don't know. But to that point, I was like, oh, maybe you guys are – like, that's what I thought. I'm like, well, maybe you guys are not deleting the WASM directory or you like the cache is still there or something else in that. They sent me the script. I was like, holy shit. Like,
I guess it's so that – maybe it's just so they're always on the latest config.
You know, that's what I thought too. And because we do run into that issue because like say moves fast like with SayDB or with this – with the – what's the other thing that just happened? The concurrency thing that concurrency thing where they run transactions concurrency. Maybe you guys haven't seen that, but that's on Arctic.
Parallelization.
Thank you. Yeah. That was
parallel EVM. Whatever the fuck it is.
It's only EVM, I think. Right.
Yeah. I think so.
That's a new config section. And what I've been doing is like, when I do those things, I basically go back and run Ansible to delete that whole node, which is basically the same thing, and then re-init and then reapply, right? A bunch of shit. And state syncing, I mean, that seems like a little bit much for state syncing because I think I would just manually do it, but yeah.
Yeah, like I don't know, I can kind of see, but it, you know, you'd only do the nuke and pave, I would think, if you had like an upgrade that you wanted to test or something, but.
Or like, yeah, or config change or something. I just thought like, I thought it was interesting because it's cool. I think it's totally fine. I thought it was interesting because we were talking about just the idea of having old shit in there at the same time. Like they completely, it's like, oh, there's clearly no old shit in there. Like it's completely wiping the whole thing out.
So you know, they might do it because of, there's an issue with say where you can't actually use the Tendermint unsafe reset or the Comet BFT unsafe reset, whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
So, you know, my state sync script actually, it'll just delete the WASM and data files and then just create a, the problem is the creation, like it'll work, the unsafe reset, but it won't, I don't think you can then start a node from it or it doesn't work. But if you just delete the data and WASM directories, you have to then create the state file in there. Otherwise the node won't start, which is a bit of a nuance maybe that was their fix for that. They're just like, fuck it, we'll nuke the whole thing and start again.
Start over. Yeah, well, I mean, my because I don't know if I'm state syncing RPC node or a validator or whatever else, right? Whether it's a signing validator, if it's just a node. So I always my approach on, because unset reset was going away, so I just move the key out. All right, I'm sorry, I move the state out, I delete the folder, I recreate the folder, I move the key back, and then I delete the WASM directory if it's outside the data, and then it just state syncs from there, right? It's just a safe process.
There are some interesting things with the various chains that some of them you need to actually get the WASM directory when you do, like when you restore from a snapshot, say, some you need to get snapshot, the WASM directory,
mm-hmm.
Others yep. You don't.
I don't know if that, so that's a good question, actually. So
well, I never do it. I just get the data directory, and sometimes I have problems with that, and sometimes I don't.
So you should check that because, like Polka, I know. I think Schulze does the same thing. I do the same thing. If the WASM is outside of, so my process on taking snapshots is that I would delete the caches out of those. Number one is what I would do is delete anything that's a cache folder, both in whether that WASM directory is in or outside of data. that cache folder gets deleted because that's architecture specific and that can fuck things up. And then that gets added to the tar. So if I tar it, then it'd be the data and WASM, or it'd be just the data if the WASM is inside. And then so when people untar that, it would automatically be in there. Because you're right. Like if those contracts are not there, if you add a new contract and the chain is running, the obviously the binary will download it, right? Like it has a copy. It'll create that WASM file because that contract came on chain and that file is saved. But if it's not there, which is what I ran today, and it's instantiated, it will clearly app hash.
Interesting.
So, and state sync, the one question that we did ask today is, I think, and maybe Schultze, you know this answer. So state sync, when I get the chunks, right? So say there's 50 chunks associated to a snapshot and we state sync that down and those 50 chunks come in. Does the WASM structure, is it part of those chunks? Number one, is it come separately? And number two, does it have to come from the same source as a snapshot?
What do you mean? Does it have to come from the same source as a snapshot?
Well, I'm picking like that thing. It searches around for snapshots, right? And it finds a peer that has the snapshot at a specific height, right? And then there's so many chunks associated with that snapshot. So it says, okay, I'm searching around. I found this peer at block height 100. Here's the peer ID, right? CC, blah, 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 blah. And then it says there's 56 chunks and it'll grab those 56 chunks, right? It'll fetch those 56 chunks from that peer. Is the WASM structure in those chunks, or is that just the data? And if not, where the fuck does the WASM files come from?
Yeah, it's part of those chunks, but it's also network dependent. There are a couple of networks. I think Terra is one of them where you do have to restore the WASM directory manually, like via snapshot. You can state sync the data, but the WASM doesn't come with. Another important thing to know is that for state syncing, you don't state sync from a single peer. You use kind of like, so you have those initial state sync peers, right? Those work as, for lack of a better term, like a light client to then connect to other peers, and then it goes through them. But the snapshots and stuff themselves come from all different peers. There's just a single.
Because that's a snapshot at a specific height, right? So every you have to find another peer with it at that exact height.
So that's the point, right? Is that you'll find a peer with the accepted height and it'll find that. And then if it finds a lower height from a different peer, it'll take that as well. That's kind of why it's important that it comes from different peers, because most of them probably, like if you're going 15,000 blocks back, most aren't going to save 15,000 blocks of state sync snapshots, right? So it can go to find to one or two peers that have that, and then it can get the rest of the snapshots from other ones. That's why you can sometimes find like state syncing doesn't go linearly. I always find that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. No, I think I'm understanding that the snapshots are coming from different peers, but once the node selects a snapshot, okay, we have a specific height and there's 57 chunks in that snapshot. Is it assumed that all 57 come from that same peer?
No.
So it might find other peers that have the same snapshot at the same height, because it has to be obviously the same block height, right? Mm-hmm. And each individual node operator can set any sort of interval on their own. Like I could set 666 on the fucking interval and it'll create a snapshot at every 666, right? Then it has to be exactly on that height because it's a snapshot at a height.
Yep.
So it might find another node out. It might find another node that has a snapshot at that exact same height with that same hash.
I think you're sticking down on the exact same height too much, though. So it's using that height as a method for building the chunk like tree. Mm-hmm. But if people have snapshots, like let's say every 2,000, it can be like if someone has every 2,000, if someone has every 3,000, they're going to take more or less the same, have all basically the same chunks, right? Like there's going to be 1,000 apart where they're going to be different, but most of the chunks within that same block are going to be the same. They might just be missing a couple. And so because they're missing a couple, they're not going to take them from them, obviously. They'll go to a different peer. Does that make sense?
It does, but the snapshot's not the whole chain history. It's just the hash of that chain at that point in time, right? Like it's not like grabbing all the history associated to, like 57 chunks doesn't make up the whole fucking history, right? So
correct.
So I guess it's okay, maybe it's more complicated than I thought. But back to the WASM thing. I don't get this, is nobody's gonna give a shit about this. who would be able to help us out with this?
Asaf. We should have called Asaf in.
Asaf, I know be like, dude, quit wasting my time with this question. This is a basic question.
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, the WASM piece, and maybe Simon too would be great. But the WASM piece was really interesting because it was weird that we had a node that was a state sync. So the node was absolutely still in sync and would run contracts because it had the contracts, right? And the WASM directory was there and it had each of those WASM files. But there was a mix of not .wasm. It would just be a hash or whatever that is, like some sort of ID. And that ID with .wasm. And then when I pulled a state, when I pulled a snapshot from that, peer, because it showed the peer ID on the snapshot I was pulling, it wouldn't pull, it would only pull the .wasm files, which means I was getting 50 contracts, even though that node had 60 contracts. And so when it would call one of those 10, I would app hash. It's crazy. So
what? Why? Why was it named different? Okay.
I don't know. That's a question. So we went back to Confio to ask, like, why was this? And that node was a state sync today. So, like, why was that node had different level? Like, it had some of it had .wasm on and some did not. And it looked like it was older contracts that was. And so we created a new one. And that one obviously had .wasm. And my node had it, right? As soon as I state synced and all that kind of stuff. But it was really weird. So it just took a while to figure that out and to figure out why nodes were app hashing on something that, you know, was just running a simple state sync on a network. So anyway, it was like, it's just been, and that stuff is stressful because there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of hype around like anything else, right? It's a new chain, right? Or this new iteration of this chain. And like, there's a lot of teams that are building on it. And like, I don't want to run nodes that are fucking app hashing and, you know, are down and we're getting no server to handle this request type of situations because of issues that are not outside of my control, but like somewhat outside of my control. And so like, I almost pulled null script in your Aleo script.
Watchdog of fortune.
I was typing it up. I had it up in code because what I was gonna do is I was gonna watch the block height, and if it stalled for like 8 seconds, I was gonna fucking state sync the node. I was just gonna delete it all, move the script, restate sync it, and just get it so I could like get some rest, because even overnight, like it would all three nodes would hash out, or not hash out. They would either hashing out was happening more randomly, but they would fail on memory or something else. It's like, I don't want to live like this, right? I don't want to have these issues.
Well, that's what I'm doing with Zion. Watchdogs, right now.
Watchdogs for the win. Just put a watchdog, turn off monitoring,
fucking nuke and pave everything.
Yeah,
I don't give a shit. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Tell us what's going on with Zion. I want to hear about that.
So for Zion, we are running a load balanced endpoint for the team as well as like the main Zion team, and they're also kind of like subletting it to other teams, right?
Sure.
And yeah. So it's taking a lot of heat, which that's not a big deal. Nodes are holding up totally fine to that. But there's, I think we haven't figured out what it is yet, but I think there's a query coming in. That when it does come in, it just app hashes the node. And
it's
probably concurrency. If I'm hazarding a guess, I'd say it's concurrency, because that's every time I've had this same shit go on other chains, even say in the early days, it was always concurrency. And it'd be a contract call which comes in through the gRPC, does some concurrency bullshit, and the app hashes the node. Anyway, that's my two cents.
What do you mean by concurrency?
Tries to do like two transactions in WASM at the same time, which are related, and there's like a concurrency issue.
Oh, meaning then, like it's shoving them both in the same block and one's dependent on the other type of idea?
Yeah, I think there's like two VMs running that are using the same shit, and then they just, you know, they're related. They're doing things that are related. Yeah, I believe that's what it is. And then
something
it just puts up a concurrency issue and app hashes, and then it's fucked and you have to restart. So
then what did you do to resolve that? So the way
complained and complained to the team until they fixed it. It's nothing I can do.
Wow. Yeah.
Back to our point.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the way we've been resolving it right now is I've got one node off to the side that takes a new snapshot every hour because stacing doesn't work on Zion. So
why does
every
it work hour on Zion?
Unclear. I think they made
like is it
app hash? Maybe need to turn errors off, bro.
Yeah.
Does it app hash on after it state syncs, or it never grabs snaps or doesn't whatever?
So it gets snaps. It fails. If I remember correctly, there's an IAVL store error that happens at the very end.
Got it.
So good and thoroughly nuked. So I'm taking snapshots very regularly. As soon as an app hash is detected and it scans every few minutes, stops the node, restores the snapshot, and kicks it back going.
fucking
watch dog scripts for the win, bro. what a glamorous life this is. I'm glad we're sharing this with everybody. This is what it is, folks. It's fucking, you think it's like a 100% oiled machine. Meanwhile, fucking watchdog scripts to nuke and pave.
It's a never-ending saga of no sleep and last resort typing out bash.
So that those nodes only app hash, those are the nodes that are actually receiving the transactions, right?
Yeah, it's so validators aren't app hashing. It's a consensus issue. Yep, correct. I've gone through and looked at Caddy logs. I've looked at all proxy logs, and there's nothing that stands out. They also, I've been piping the logs to the team, and they also haven't seen anything that stands out. Everything looks fine.
Go ahead. So is it, how many nodes are in the balancer?
10? 10.
10?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Fucking 10 at one endpoint?
Yes.
Or are you doing like geo?
One endpoint.
Holy shit. So 10?
Yeah.
Are they all same region or?
How many fucking transactions are you seeing? Like how much RPC requests are you getting?
60 to 100 requests per second.
Oh, that's not much. So, and then what's your balance strategy?
Round robin. Pretty simple. And then if one fails, then it just retries to the next node.
So is it just the node that is, so what actually app hashes? All of them?
No. So the one that, so typically what happens is one will app hash and then it'll app hash the next one in the line because it'll retry.
Can you balance based off of source IP? So that in that situation, to Null's point, like, is it because I'm not sure why the first node would app hash, to be honest, but is it because those two transactions need to go to the same node?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think they'd be going to the same node.
If it's a concurrency issue, you'd want them both in the same. You want them both in the same mempool,
right?
Like they're probably batching transactions though. If they need to be done together, if they need to go on the same block, they'd be batching them.
Like on the EVM side, and not so much on the Tendermint side, to be honest. But on the EVM side, I make sure that based on source IP, they're going to the same node. Because on the EVM side, I know there is a tremendous amount of It's a little bit more complicated. I don't really know it well enough, but I've seen this also on other nodes like associated to Geth and some other types of things, even on the Ethereum side, even though that's a little bit less of an issue because the block times are so longer. But on other nodes that are Geth based that have a much shorter block time, like Avalanche is a good example of that. Like I make sure that those nodes are going to the same one. So you might want to change the balance to not be round robin. You might want to say, at least as a test.
Well, you can round robin. Shit. You can round robin, but just have what is it called? Affinity, IP affinity. It'll round robin to new users, but once it assigns like a server to a user, it'll stick to that until it becomes unavailable.
Like HA proxy, I would balance based off of the, well, we're
are you using HA though, Schulte? Are you using Caddy?
Caddy.
No, but Caddy can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would look at this, but is it behind Cloudflare or no?
Yeah.
So if
you're using Cloudflare and you've got multiple proxies, you'll have to put IP affinity in Cloudflare and IP affinity in Hardproxy Caddy.
Yeah. No, yeah. In Caddy, you need to look at the header called connecting.-IP because the IP is actually the Cloudflare IP. So you have to look at the header for connecting IP and then that'll pick off the header, which is the client IP. To make sure the client IP gets routed to the same node. And then, yes,
for Caddy, it's called forwarded IP, but yeah, same difference.
No, not forward IP. You want to look at the header. There's a header called connecting IP.
If it's proxied through something like Cloudflare, I'm pretty sure in Caddy you need the forward IP, which is like before it gets the previous proxy. Otherwise, if you use the source IP, it'll just give you the proxy.
Source IP will give you the proxy. But Cloudflare sends a specific header with the client IP, and that's called connecting capital C-IP. That is the Cloudflare connecting IP. That means that's the IP that can ask the request. That's what you want to, that's what you want to balance off of.
We should stop telling everybody tricks.
And then to Null's point, in Cloudflare, you want to make sure that you have affinity to the, just means that like, hey, just send it to the same balancer or the,
yeah,
to be the right term, send it to the same origin. And then the origin server would then, but if you only have one origin, you have one balancer or multiple balancers?
Oh, sorry. Multiple balancers.
Oh, okay. All right. So then so affinity there.
Well, one balancer in Cloudflare, but that goes to multiple origins, right? Like you've got multiple caddies running.
Yeah.
So you need session affinity to the caddy that it originally sends it to. Yeah.
Okay. That's a cool idea. I will do that.
I don't know. Maybe, but well, if it is something related to like this idea.
You and me, sir, because we had this problem like years ago, right? And that's when we came up with that fucking affinity thing. Well, I've had this problem on Say and Osmosis.
Not so much. Yeah, I haven't had so much on the Tendermint side. I've had a little bit more on the EVM side, but it's not bad. I mean, I don't really enjoy that too much with like, I mean, we have a lot of clients that have like a lot of fixed IPs. We get a lot of traffic from the same IP. I don't know if I want just, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter, to be honest. And then HAProxy, which is like a child to me. But that HAProxy, then I do balancing based off of like a ton of different shit. And then I love the failover aspect of that and the controls in there. But it's a long shot, but in those types of situations, if you are getting a shitload of transactions in a very short time span, that is a good example. The other thing you could do is just expose one port on one node and have them try to just one node. That's another way of getting around this. Like you have this giant fucking 10 node, whatever the fuck you're doing, but just expose one thing and say, hey, try it again to here. And if it fails there, like you just have one node with a, you know, 57 port open. If it fails there, then you know this isn't the issue.
That's a good point, except the fact that there are a bunch of different teams involved that are hitting it. And so I have to go to each team saying, hey, only use this and see what happens. I think that's where the issue is coming from. Because I think that if I were to point fingers, this wasn't an issue until Nomos came up. And it's happened basically since then. And so if I had to guess, it was the Nomos team. I'm not saying they're doing inefficient or something, just that whatever's happening with their utilization has exacerbated the issue.
Yeah, they are doing lots of crazy shit, though. What have they got, like 10,000 fucking IBC channels?
Yeah. Well, that's expected, though, because ICA is a new channel per user. So that's totally normal.
What?
I was waiting for it. Fucking what? Yeah. And they got just an insane amount of channels. And what has he got?
Wait. Per what kind of user? Like me? Like a person?
Yeah. So for every ICA account, like if you create an ICA account over ICA,
what's with the interchain account?
Yeah, then you'll get your own channel for that.
And ICA. If I do one transaction, that channel is created, and then it's there forever.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
What the fuck?
That's some overhead.
Does Strangelove know about this? Like, they know. They listen. Is it built for that? It's not really built for that, is it?
Kind of it. It handles it fine. Like you basically just do a wildcard for channels. The problem is that, I mean, they need to stay open, right? And so the more ICA channels you have, you're pulling now for more and more channels and keeping more and more channels alive. It's kind of like a recursive hellhole.
Could you imagine the bloody chain? What do they call it? Chain.
The poor
registries for that chain. Exactly. And the channel list is just 400 pages long.
The poor Mintscan IBC channel team. Oh God. What am I gonna do? But once that channel's open, doesn't it expire?
So that's why we have to keep calling for it. So in theory it should, but no.
Wait. Because it has to expire. It was a 2/3 of the unbonding period, right? So does that mean you have to run? Wait, I don't understand this at all. Does that mean you have to run a transaction through every one of those channels every 2/3 of the unbonding period?
So I'm not sure how that works for ICA specifically. It might require that, or they might have done it differently.
You're right.
I would guess they'd have it differently.
You're right. It's not truly IBC, right? It's not a regular IBC channel. It's truly an IBA. It's definitely different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was thinking in my head it was like an IPC channel per user. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Well, I mean, it is. It is a channel per user. I just don't know if it has the same rules around channels closing.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think strictly speaking, if I were to guess, I would say that it does. But for IBC, you can just do an update channel transaction, which are very simple, but it would still, increase state.
Right. Right. Okay. Oh. This is like a technical fucking episode, man. We're like deep in it. Phrase not here.
It's going to be every week.
Down to the elbow.
Is that what gets our viewers? Hey, there you go.
Sup, rocker boy.
Look at you. What? I like this. Let me fix things here.
Yeah, fucking hell, man. You look different this week. And what's with this big ass couch?
I can't use the computer upstairs because everybody's already asleep.
Where's the fucking mess, man? Where's the mess?
Where's the mess? There's no racks of shit. This is like I'm thinking a chin view, not the drop down. This is like a whole new fray.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on my desk.
Camera lights not on my desk,
so things are obviously less messy. There you
go. Maybe turn half the lights off and shine a flashlight in the side.
Oh man, you look like a completely different person, like straight on than the chin view.
So funny. How was your prog rock situation over there? Give us a load out.
I would say that the band Prognosis were substantially better than their band name. It was kind of technical, modern British, I would say British progressive tech metal in that kind of, it post-Haken, post-Tesseract kind of vibe, like a little bit of atmosphere, but still like lots of quite heavy polyrhythms, but not like quite as gonzo and in your face as the American stuff, like the Periphery, Animals as Leaders type style. There was one particular riff that was very Animals as Leaders. It was very like modal over like a polyrhythm thing, and it wasn't like, you know, Scandinavian heavy like Meshuggahs and whatnot. It like didn't have that kind of dissonance to it. They know he played a short set, but it was, it was interesting. It was good. They're much better than their band name. Without my glasses on, I think the other guitarist was wearing a silk shirt, not a kimono, as I had initially thought. I think they have such good things ahead of them in the UK tech metal scene if they change their band name. That would be my review.
Such a fine line between silk shirt and kimono.
Basically, I left the venue and I realized I look really tired because I am. And I saw one of the band smoking outside and I just went, I'm sorry, I'm probably literally never going to see you again. So I got to tell you, you're like an A-tier young tech metal band and you need to change your name.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. I was like, the name is, maybe the name won't hold you back. What do I know about anything? But I think you need to change your name. Peace. And then peace. I literally disappeared into the night, smoke bombed away.
You actually said that to them?
Hey, good feedback, man. You gotta give it to them. I do see
they were talking to like somebody else, I don't know, or a friend, and that person like, just looked, because I'd broken every rule of Britishness at that point. That person looked mortified that I was being that honest. Is we don't do that here.
Your name like, sucks. You need more 17-8. Peace. Peace. Out. See ya. Where's the tube? The tube. They do have albums on Spotify. They have one with a huge eyeball on it, so that's always like a red flag. But you know, so is the name. So, oh, there's Prognosis Radio. Somebody actually built a radio station around it. Oh, I'm all over this.
Yeah, they're pretty good. That's what I was doing.
Nice. We've been actually in pretty deep technical talk, to be honest.
Been deep in it.
Yeah, we've been in it. We talked about WASM shit. We talked about Schulte working on weird concurrency issues on GRPC. Was it GRPC?
API. Actually disabled GRPC just to kind of reduce that.
We talked about maybe some load balancer structure, which I'm sure he's working on right now and ignoring the rest of this podcast. We talked about
he must be listening in some capacity. There's a big fucking grin on his face.
I know, right? He's got something. He's got something that might be promising that'll eventually disappoint him, like the rest of the shit. We talked about Injective Pego and shitting on that a little bit. Well, you missed a lot. It's a good show.
Yeah, but there were more riffs where I was, and as a bonus, the basement did smell like piss. So.
Did it?
Like all good.
Very authentic.
Was it a real basement?
Venues post. Because the thing is, right, it used to be that you could smoke indoors, and that was obviously really bad for all of our health, and we were all, like, dying, and that was bad, especially if you worked in the venue. Obviously, you were, like, dying, and that was super bad.
Yeah.
And I do recognize all of that, but the venue smelled like cigarettes and not like piss, and now they smell like piss.
I mean, are you honestly suggesting that the smell of piss is worse than cigarettes? Like, is that where you're? Are you coming at me with that?
I think the smell of piss, especially gig venues, because it's actually kind of piss and Strongbow, but it's like Strongbow has been on the floor for a while.
Yeah, it's not like new piss; it's old piss. There's a difference.
No. The piss is just a kind of background miasma, but the Strongbow is like. It's like fermenting again.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I'll take. Oh, you guys know what
Strongbow is? Strongbow is a cider. Not your cider, hard cider, like actual cider, like the meaning of the word. Not apple juice.
Cider. So, funny story about smoking and piss in Australia. there used to be basically every bar you'd get like. Bars have changed a lot in like the last 10 years in Australia. It used to be every bar you'd go into, well, it's probably been almost, it'll be 10 to 15 years ago when they banned smoking in pubs, right? And, you know, dance venues and that type of stuff. So when I first went to college, you could like be on the dance floor burning the fuck out of everyone with your cigarette and come home with like your dreadlocks smelling like fucking smoke, and then your bed and your missus
getting up. You and smoking ban notwithstanding, you had dreadlocks.
Yeah, man, I had the bangiest fucking dreadlocks.
Oh man. My god,
that's bullshit.
I think I need to see that.
You're full of shit.
I can find some evidence.
All right,
find
some evidence. Tech metal band, because that would have been the period. No, it would have been. It would have been a skate metal band, like Korn, something like that, like a new metal band.
I don't know if I should be giving you the evidence.
Not right now, but later, yes.
I don't even know if I should give it to you privately. I feel like it's something you will like screenshot immediately.
Did you?
Anyway, so
go on the blockchain immediately is what will happen.
Yeah, so NFT. So back when you could like smoke in the pubs. There used to be at every bar, there'd be like an ashtray that ran around the perimeter of the base of the bar. Did you have those over there?
Oh, I'm sorry, the what?
Because there would be like a dished masonry at the base of the bar. So, you know, in Australia, you have big, long bars, right? And big corner in it, like the old school bars, pubs, the old school pubs. The bar in the pub would have like this dished masonry bowl that just went right around the perimeter of the bar.
Okay.
And people would like stand there and drink their schooners, having their cigarettes, and then piss in the ashtray.
Because you
could do it in a crowd. Like if there was just shitloads of people there, you could get away with
pissing in the ashtray. Stand on a chair? I don't understand. Like what? Like
no, you just stand at the bar and then they'll just piss against the bar wall and it would go down into the ashtray.
Oh, I see. So that was at the base.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the base? Okay. Yeah.
I gotcha.
Bunch of fucking
dude. Fucking,
I'm outraged.
This is why you all got deported, man. Like,
and you'd wonder why the one guy had been standing at the bar drinking schooners for fucking 7 hours and not moved. Like, what was he doing? What was going in the ashtray?
I have no idea.
It's a whole new world to watching Waking Fright, doesn't it?
We need to back up
a moment. Did it drain, or would it just like as the night went on get deeper and deeper and deeper?
Yeah, just like just get deeper and smell like piss.
Just get deeper.
God.
And then probably never get good, probably just evaporate the next day, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what happened.
That's pretty hot. Absolutely.
Just evaporated. Oh my goodness. What the hell are we talking about? how do we end up on this?
I expect to know what's going on.
I was like, any news? You want to do news?
The one line of news?
Or fuck it.
Yeah, fuck it. We've avoided news already today, like, so you might as well just.
Rama said episode 113 has news. There's literally no episode 113. We're only on like.
But it will have news.
It will have news.
Yeah.
This CZ news. So there is a piece of news here. And that news is that CZ got sentenced finally. So CZ from Binance pleaded guilty. Oh, let me find that better piece of news or kind of source of it. There's actually a pretty funny quote in this news. I'll put a link to there's an article on CNBC, which is not the greatest source, but whatever. I thought it was pretty hilarious. But CZ got sentenced. So he pleaded guilty to money laundering here in the US and a couple other things. And so he got sentenced. The prosecutor was looking for 3 years. They ordered Binance to pay $4.3 billion, and Zhao agreed to pay $50 million. It's kind of a gap between those two items. They wanted him to be in jail for 3 years. He got 4 months, which really means, here in the US, 4 months probably means you're out in 60 days, maybe. And it's like, it's not even worthwhile. Like, you're done, right? He did have to agree to step down as part of his agreement, but he owns like fucking what, like four, he owns like 90% of Binance, right? So like, there's nothing, he can't be CEO, anymore.
Yeah. It's more about that though, isn't it? It's more about the administering the slap on the wrist, and it's the psychology of saying we are in charge, we are in control, right?
I guess so. Yeah. Obviously they have a new CEO and all the kind of structure associated to saying that they're going to build more robust compliance structure and all that kind of stuff. And like, I'm not defending CZ. Like it was definitely Wild West. Right. And there was a ton of shit within there. He's also not operating out of the US, but whatever. Let me find this great quote that came from the prosecutor. I think this must've been before the actual decision. He was just saying that prosecutor said that Zhao violated U.S. laws on an unprecedented scale. Zhao bet that he would not get caught, and that if he did, the consequences would not be as serious as the crime, the memorandum said. But Zhao was caught, and now the court will decide what price Zhao will pay for his crimes. And that price is a fucking Malibu beach house. And 4 months, and he keeps $4 billion. Like, it's totally worth it. Like, I would do it for $4 billion. Like, it's fucking 60 days. Like, no problem. I'm in. How hard can it be? 60 days.
What's the damage to people's lives?
There's actually this article goes around a lot. Because, I mean, look at an SBF. Like, Sam caught 25 years. And CZ here is at 4 months. And I think this article does point at, I mean, FTX in terms of causing harm to investors is one thing, and the idea around just like regulatory and compliance bullshit, honestly, juries don't give a fuck. And so I think that is kind of the message here, which is hey, individuals are able to do what they want to be able to do, and there's a free market for them to be able to do that. And whether he's in compliance or not, this is obviously the dollars are huge, and they're big dollars in here, but like, the jail time is nothing. Like, this is pretty significant. Now, I think he still faces some other shit, if I remember, because this was only federal, right? And he still has FTC and something else, I think, coming. So it might be a bit more than this, but this kind of sets the tone, I thought. So anyway, interesting.
I mean, I think the interesting thing out of this is it is what you just said there, right? Which is that in a lot of other jurisdictions, the threshold for even doing anything is user harm. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this ruling reflects. I think the more twisted bit of it is it's once again kind of, you know, like you said, they're not based in the US. Like, they happen to operate, you know, a lot of their markets in the US. But I think that's the bit that is, I think, a bit insidious, because it's like, well, for any of this party to work in the long term, It's going to be the question of who sets the rules, right? Because it's a multilateral, we're in a multilateral world and we're building software systems that can work in only a multilateral setting. And the idea that the US gets to call the shots, like, yeah, you have aircraft carriers, but it does mean you can control data centers. So yes, you can control the internet, but like, I don't know. It just feels kind of weird to my cypherpunk bones to be like, don't think your aircraft carriers mean that you get to control encryption. Like, I don't know. Fuck it. I don't know. It's late here.
No, I mean,
have you seen that Napoleon film? Like, to bring it back to films, because that's what we really want to talk about. Have you seen the Napoleon film, the Ridley Scott one?
No, that's a new one, right?
It's shit. Don't watch it.
Okay.
Well, it's not shit. No, it's worth watching, but it's like fine out of 10. It's like a bit of a fuck up and it's way too long. But there is an amazingly bad line in it. Like, 10 out of 10, dog shit writing. How did this get past the writing
room? Is that the Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. He literally just shouts at the British ambassador, "You think you're so great because you have boats." That is the line they went with. It got past the writer's room. It got past the editors and they put it in the film. They gave it to Joaquin and said, yes, this is the line.
Amazing.
This is the line. Please read the line.
This is historically accurate.
Taps the piece of paper. Please read, Mr. Phoenix, please read the line. And that's kind of what I feel like. You look at this ruling and you're like, you think you're so great, America, because you have boats.
Anyway, well, we do
then
have boats,
again, so though, they probably are using Binance US as their cause of jurisdiction, right? Which it totally bad. And would it also explain more?
Never incorporate shit in the US ever under any circumstances. Otherwise, you would get 4 months in prison.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Four months in prison.
Whole months.
Yeah.
That's how they get you.
That's it. That's the news. I think we covered it all.
And for the record, Robot Jocks is definitely better than Napoleon. And in addition, my other half, having walked in only halfway through Robot Jocks.
This isn't, before we go, this isn't like Dark
Side. Her review of Napoleon was that Robot Jocks had a clearer plot arc. Just say.
This isn't like Dark Side of the Moon Robot Jocks. You're talking about like true Robot Jocks. You know, like sit down. You know, like sit down and smoke this with me and then we're going to start over and start with a fucking money or something.
I tell you what I will do. I will try and torrent Robot Jocks, sync it up to Dark Side of the Moon and then like put it on YouTube and get immediately taken down.
Robot Jocks is a good fucking movie. It is has a clear purpose. It's fun. You got a good, it's got a good, like, you know, protagonist. Like, it's all right. You know what I did watch this week? I watched Arena. That movie, were you talking about that?
Yeah, I was recommended it when I went looking for Robot Jocks. Somebody was like,
awesome.
Arena.
I think I watched that in the 80s because I remember it. Because I remember that dude, I forget what this guy's name, but he was like battling this giant grasshopper. He had these huge fucking legs and like, I mean, literally, it's like it's this dude beating up actors in rubber suits and like the robot from Lost in Space and shit. But that movie was, I mean, the quality of the action in that movie and like the sets and everything else, it wasn't bad for that time. Like, it was a pretty decent movie. I liked it. You should go watch it.
It's on my, it's for, the whole thing's on YouTube, as luck would have it. So
they give that one away
for
free.
Hard to track down. It's on my to-do list this weekend.
Do it. Highly recommended. Well, all right. Maybe not highly is a little bit much, but
it's recommended.
It's okay. Like, you put in the background while you're doing something else.